This TFMR podcast is brought to you by your friends at JM Bullion. Visit jmbullion.com for all your gold and silver bullion needs. Well, happy weekend to everybody out there at TFMR. It's Saturday morning, January the 25th. Oh, I don't know, 11:20 or so Eastern time. And I've got this special, we'll call it the special coronavirus outbreak podcast for you. This is something that is getting increased attention here, just really in the last 48 to 72 hours. I know many folks here at TFMR are trying to catch up and stay on top of things. There's a lot of information out there that so much of it you can't verify. You see stuff on Twitter, you don't know what it is. You don't know if it's authentic. And so we're up against a number of challenges in trying to get our arms around this and what it really means. And so one of the crazy benefits of running a website like this, you've heard me talk about this before. I know people that I can't believe I even know. And and one of the guys I met years ago now, I mean, we've been friends now for, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, I guess, Chris, is Chris Martinson. I always introduce Chris as the smartest guy I know. And there's a reason for that. And we'll explain that in a minute. But I thought if there's anybody that can explain in English to all of us and everybody listening, you know, where we are with this and what it means, it'd be Chris Martinson. So, Chris, I hear it's a Saturday and you're taking time to do this. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, well, thanks. Thanks, Craig. And it's a pleasure to be here. And I have the great fortune of somebody asked me, you know, Chris, what do you do? And I had to summarize it quickly. And I said, I read. So I have the great fortune of being able to read a lot. That's what it passes off as smart, you know, but really, honestly, I just have the luxury of being able to read and read and read and try and stay on top of things. So that's what I do. And happy to be here to be able to share that.
We met, God, we've known each other for 7 or 8 years now. Your site, peakprosperity.com, which you run with Adam Taggart, is a fantastic site. And a lot of our discussions in the past are kind of on the macro scale about, you know, the global economic system and you know, how fragile it is and the steps, you know, that have made it more fragile in the last 10 years. And all of that can be monitored at peakprosperity.com. And I can't emphasize enough how people should go there, especially now, given what's going on, and check it out. And so all of Chris's work can be found there. And that's an extremely important site that you should make sure you know about. In this regard, Chris, with this virus, This goes right into a specific part of your background, because you're not like, I mean, you're not like a finance guy. You're not like one of, you know, these guys that stepped off of Wall Street. You come out of, I don't call it the healthcare realm. Tell everybody about your background and your specific PhD in regards to what we're about to discuss.
Sure. And it's unfortunate that it's becoming so relevant. But once upon a time, I went to Duke University. I got my PhD through the Department of Pathology, specialty toxicology, subspecialty neurotoxicology. And that all becomes relevant because to study neurotoxicology, it was a lot of cell biological research. So that's involves a lot of sterile protocol, working in hoods, learning about contamination, how to be careful, things like that. So my training is the first 2 years at the pathology department is with all the first 2 year medical students. Then for the second 2 years of that journey, they went off to treat patients and I went off into the lab to work with cells and cell biological materials.
Okay. So now we've established that you know a lot about this stuff. And like I said, you're the smartest guy I know. I always tell a funny story, Chris. I don't know if you remember this or not, but I remember in 2014, I was taking my family to Hawaii. This is 3 years post Fukushima. And I thought, I'm going to call Chris Martinson and find out if it's okay to eat the fish. And you told me it was. So I knew I was okay. So that's why I wanted to talk to you about this. Let's start with the situation itself. When I first heard about this back on Monday, this coronavirus, you know, they were just then confirming that human-to-human transmission was happening, which is, you know, like one of the first alarm bells. But then at the same time, Chris, I see this and I think, well, you know, there's been SARS, there have been two or three others viruses that have been prevalent have come out of China in the last couple of decades, and they all kind of flame themselves out, you know, and everybody gets all worked up, you know, and we know a lot of people die from type A influenza every year, all that kind of stuff. So first and foremost, from what you know right now, how is this, or is this at all different from SARS, or could it really be something like the Spanish flu or the Black Plague, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, you know, basically each viral pathogen that comes out is its own thing, and we classify them into various groups. So a coronavirus is different from an avian flu virus, you know, the HN series, H1, N5, H2, N6, whatever the HNs are, right? And those are different from, you know, the other types that are out there. So this is this one caught my attention early because they did some early rapid genotyping on it and discovered, oh, this is a bat coronavirus that somehow went through a snake because it's got some snake coronavirus bits in it that then made the dreaded species jump into humans. So that's step one of something that you have to really watch out for is, has it made the jump to humans? That's where you know you're on somewhere on the pandemic list. Is that's a step you have to take. So some of these things like MERS and other things, they're still they transmit poorly human to human. They think the main reservoirs for these things are still somehow out there in the natural world. So people get in contact with an infected snake or a bat or a civet, whatever the story is. So it keeps jumping into humans, and then it spreads sort of okay, but kind of weakly. This one right away jumped straight into humans, and we had very early human to human contact. So quick explanation. They do these in generations. So if I got it from a snake and I gave it to you, that would be a one generation hop, right? So we have a first generation human to human. But then you give it to somebody that's a second generation. Now, as soon as you get a second generation hit, you're like, okay, this thing is really hopping between people. Well, a few days ago, we got confirmation of at least fourth generation hopping. So that's part one. You need to understand this stuff is jumping from person to person. The second thing to understand is, well, how easily does it do that? You know, if I had this and I was infected and walking around, would I on average transmit this to one other person, less than one person on average, or more, right? And this is called the R naught, and it's just a way of measuring that transmissivity. Like, how easily does this thing jump? How virulent is it? Anything with an R naught of one, meaning I have it, I give it to one other person, that will sustain itself. That'll sort of continue to cook through a population. Anything less than one, hey, no big deal. It's going to kill itself off and die out over time. But if it's over one, that means if I have a chance of giving it to two people on average, now it has the chance of going exponential because my one goes to two, their two goes to four, their four goes to eight, and on like that. Well, right now, the early R naught for this that we've gotten, again, this is bad data. Maybe it'll change. I reserve the right to change this. You know, this might change by tonight when new information comes in. But right now, the earliest estimates we have is an R naught of 2.5. And that's based on official case rate data. How much, Craig, do you trust that the Chinese government is giving us the accurate, full, complete, and total figures for this? Right. I don't. So I think 2.5 is the low guess on this at this point. My bet, if I had to put money on a craps table, I'm betting on the over, and this is going to get revised upward, but it doesn't matter. Even if it's only 2.5, this thing now has all the features we need for a pandemic, which brings us to the final piece of this. Well, how bad is it? You know, what's the case fatality rate? Somebody gets this, what's the chance? The early statistics say a 3% case fatality rate. I think that's going to go higher. And again, we don't have great data around this yet. I don't trust stuff coming out of China. But when you look at how many people could have possibly been infected in the early days, it has about a 15-day burn window. So until somebody's had it, diagnosed, and spent 15 days either in the ICU or recovering, until we have that total cohort, we can't add up how many. We don't really know. But for now, making some rough guesses, this thing could have a case fatality rate that's as bad as the Spanish flu, which would be in the vicinity of 10%. But again, I got to caution everybody. I'm not here to whip up fear. I'm just telling you that we have a minimum case fatality rate of about 3%. Until we get better data, we don't know. But right now, it's leaning towards maybe higher. And that alone will cause people to change their behaviors. This is how SARS burned itself out. People said, I don't want any part of that. So they stopped flying. They didn't go to malls. People remember everybody had face masks all over Canada, you know, everywhere. That's how you stop something like this, is you stop associating with people. And that's what your listeners need to be most alert to.
Yeah. As I look, you hear these reports, even here this morning, about China continuing to kind of blockade and quarantine cities. It seems like even Beijing may go that way. Is that an overabundance of caution, or is that something that, like, oh man, they must, I mean, this is getting really scary. I mean, how do you read that?
I, as always, as I do with the Federal Reserve, as you do, I trust what people do, not what they say.
Yeah.
So the Chinese government's been talking, I think, what every government would do in their position of containment, yeah, and they act like they've got this under control. But all you have to do is go on Twitter, and I advise people to go check this out. We've got all these articles and images and videos posted at my site. But the Chinese government is going to build a 10,000-bed hospital in Wuhan in 6 days, right? And you don't just sort of, you know, it's amazing to see. I really admire what they're doing. You see, like, I don't know, 40 or 50 excavators all like scraping at a piece of ground. Nobody does mass rapid construction like the Chinese. It's astonishing, right? Well, they're doing that because they've got information. And their information says, geez, we're going to need 10,000 beds. And that may even be light at this point in time, because let's take the numbers that we have so far. As of 2 days ago, we had 816 confirmed cases. Again, I think that's a low ball, but take that at face value. And within that, there were 97 cases that were considered critical, right? So all of a sudden, you have a criticality rate that's at least 10%. We've got new data now that, again, it's early, but I think the criticality rate is closer to 20%. So these are people who need to go and spend time in an ICU because they're critical. A temperature of 105 or higher, you know, they've got pneumonia, they can't breathe, something, right? If you have a 20% case fatality rate, 3% case fatality rate and a 10% criticality rate in this, consider Wuhan as a city of 11 million people.
Right.
Well, half of them get this disease, which is not unthinkable, and you have a 10% rate, you've got 5.5 million people times 10%. All of a sudden, you have 550,000 people who are going to need to occupy an ICU bed for, it looks like, 1 or 2 weeks. You add those numbers up, 10,000 beds is a start in that story, but right, that's what they're fearing, are mass numbers like that. And listen, we all hope that the containment measures work. Everybody gets the fear of God. Everybody wears masks. We'll talk about later what everybody can and should be doing about this. But if this goes the way of the Spanish flu, and again, we're much more well-educated and we know how to stop these things, but still, people are people, you know, and they go out and they do things that they shouldn't, and they get infected, and that's what happens. So this could really be something that completely overwhelms the system, and it's totally overwhelmed the medical system in Wuhan already. Their emergency building, as big a hospital as they can think about, it'll be tents, you know, with beds in them. But even still, the Chinese government wouldn't be doing that if they didn't feel like they had to.
Right.
If they do.
Well, and again, for, you mentioned the scale, and this is important. I mean, if you're suddenly building a 10,000 bed hospital in New Hampshire, that's one thing. You know what I mean? In a city of 11 million, you can see where you might need 10,000 beds. You know, and that's kind of a critical distinction for scale, I would think. And what is it, Chris, in terms of, you've seen these videos of people walking down the street and just dropping?
Yeah.
I mean, do you buy that? I mean, is there anything that's that virulent that just, you know, people are walking along and just keeling over like that?
Yeah, so let's take those with a bit of caution, because, you know, in a city of 11 million, you're going to have some drunks that do that. I don't know the provenance of those videos, so I've looked at them. Obviously, you know, by the time you have people pitching over in the streets, you know, you're pretty far down the, you know, some Hollywood blockbuster contagion movie, you know. And yes, it's possible. So people who, you know, imagine somebody who can't afford to go to the hospital or feels like they have to continue to work. We all know those heroes. We hated them at work where I came from. You know, I'm going to work no matter how sick I am, you know, getting everybody sick. We hated them. I did. You know, but people will be heroes, and some of them, for personal reasons, have to keep moving through life. pneumonia has the chance of dropping you like that. You can pass out pretty quickly if you're struggling along and barely breathing, and then you suddenly hit your saturation limit and your O2 drops below a certain blood level. You'll keel over. Yep. I want to caution people. It's very, very hard to know what we're watching when we see these things, but some of them look real to me.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's go to the second question then. Most people are listening to this in the U.S., Canada, maybe Europe, Australia. At what point should someone, really get concerned? Is there a total number of cases per country? Is it where you begin to see, real exponential growth someplace outside of China? Not that we're not concerned now, but at what point do you go, this is really getting out of hand.
Yeah. So let's take this, let's do a color coding. Condition white, don't worry about anything. It's everything's fine. You just walk around outside, no extra awareness, right? Everybody needs to be a condition yellow, which is, I need to now be aware of surfaces I touch and things like that, which you should probably do as a prudent adult during any flu season, right? Oh my gosh, I just put my hand on an escalator rail in the airport. And you know what? Before I rub my eyes, or put food in my mouth, I'm going to go wash my hands, right? That's condition yellow, right? Everybody ought to be there. And this is something I would advise people to practice at home. This isn't something, when I go out in public, I'll suddenly break a lifelong habit of picking my nose, right? You're going to have to practice breaking these habits at home. And so that would look something like this. Every time I get out of my chair, I'm touching an armrest. That's a public surface. I'm going to go wash my hands. It's so hard, Craig, to break those habits, but you practice them at home. So when you go in public, they're already ingrained, or it's not that much of a stretch, right? It's just normal hygiene. Again, my background is somebody who worked with cells in a sterile environment. I'll tell you, contamination involves touching one non-sterile thing, and that's contamination. Boom, done, right? So people just, it's very hard to sort of break that in, but it's not impossible. And if, life is on the line. So I think everybody needs to be automatically in condition yellow, which is every doorknob you touch, all of that. You see somebody coughing, for God's sake, don't spend time around them. Don't be breathing in. Just move off. So, and if that sounds alarmist, sorry, but that's just the nature of understanding, bacteria and virus and microbiology. It's just part of it, right? Where do you move to condition red though? For me, which is I am now not going out in public without eye protection and mouth protection, because we now have confirmed cases that a doctor at least, but other confirmed cases I think are coming in where they accidentally got infected through their eyes. They were wearing full proper masks and all of that, right? Two, you have to understand, if you are wearing a mask, not a surgical mask, those little fluffy ones with all the air gaps around them, those are meant to prevent the surgeon from infecting somebody outside of them, because it catches anything that might be breathing out of their nose, but it doesn't protect you from anything that wants to come in back around all those gaps. So a proper fitting mask, this condition red is when your pandemic is in your town. So for me, first confirmed case in my community, I go condition red, which means I'm not out in public anymore without wearing a tight fitting mask. And if I think I'm going to actually be in contact with other people, like I'm on a bus, I'm in a subway, I'm in the grocery store, I'm going to wear goggles too, right? It's that serious, because listen, even if it only has a 3% case fatality rate, too big of a risk for me. I'm 57, so I think the case fatality rate is 3% across the population, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little more heavily weighted for people over 50 and kids under one, right? So those, you got to be more protective depending on your age. So that's condition red. Condition black for me is when all of a sudden I'm not going out of my house anymore. That's it. I'm all done. If I was in Wuhan right now, I'd be in condition black. But for people who haven't prepared, they've got no food stored up, they don't have any way of purifying water, they haven't thought this through, they don't have any protective gear except for a surgical mask, that's a really difficult place to be, which is why we have been recommending at Peak Prosperity forever. It's like, why wouldn't you just go out and make some basic preparations? You should have these things just in case, right? Yeah. Not expensive. Most people won't do it because it breaks some belief system in them, which is they don't want to think this way or it's too negative, but just go hang out with the people who operate your community emergency response teams, the CERT folks, or any people in the military, or any public responders. Like this is just normal thinking. For some reason, at the individual level, it's been shamed, and I don't understand that. It's weird. It's like, only the authorities should be thinking that way. You shouldn't. That's ridiculous to me.
Chris, what, just from in a epidemiological sense, how's that for a big word? What are the chances, and this is just your guess, and you don't have to make a guess if you don't want to, but what are the chances that the way this spreads and the, you know, the incubation period, people walking around for 5 or 7 days, not even knowing they have it, what are the chances that it's already spread, you know, that people came from China, we had, you know, those college kids in Texas, that kind of thing, and they've all contacted people. What are the chances that we don't even know this? I mean, that like a week from now, we could be, you know, almost at a global condition red. I mean, is it a less than 1% chance? I mean, you want to try to categorize that?
Oh, I'd put it as close to 100% as I can right now. And the reason is with that minimum R naught of 2.5, it's very infective. So, you know, this is, you know, all you have to have is that individual from Wuhan sitting in row, you know, B2, you know, coughing on the seat in front of them. Everybody's deplaning, and I do this too. You know, you steady yourself, you put your hand on the backrest as you, you know, walk along. And the chance that we have had 20 plus days, in fact, even as of today, the only screening measures we've got going on, we're still taking inbound flights from China, including from Wuhan, until they shut the flights down from Wuhan, like we were taking flights from there too. They're landing everywhere. And as you mentioned, this thing has a 5-day roughly incubation period, which means asymptomatic, no fever, no chills, no aches. You don't know it. Nobody knows it. So but you're still fully infected and infective, right? And so even today at Chicago, LA, and New York, all they're doing is taking temperature readings of people coming off the plane. Great. So if somebody's already in the expressive stage of symptomology, you might catch them, right? But otherwise, we're not. So the chance that people have got this virus asymptomatically for 20 days completely unmolested, but even by simple screening, and since then, by simple screening, what's the chance that this has not spread outside the borders? Literally as close to zero as you can get.
So how do I want to phrase this then? I mean, should we expect by Super Bowl Sunday that this has gotten far worse, that this is the dominant story?
I would think so at this point. And again, this is all early, and I don't want to be alarmist.
Right,
but
right.
This has all my personal alarm bells going off.
Okay.
And you look at the trajectories of past pandemics. So a little sketchy. We've got some data on the 1919 one. You know, people weren't exactly gathering data like we do today. And then we have the SARS and MERS, and we have some data on these things. And so typically there's actually multiple waves of these things. So in 1919, there was a wave of Spanish flu that went around the world, and then it kind of calmed down and people were like, woo, right?
Yeah, we survived.
Then some sort of critical mutation happened. One person, you know, what's happening is when you get a virus, it replicates inside you. Trillions upon trillions of these things are being manufactured and killing your cells, which is, you know, how they are destructively self-replicative. That's what causes the trouble. And your body's fighting that off. And so there's trillions and trillions of these replicating things going on. Every so often there's a little screw up, you know? You can't do it all perfectly. You know, we're copying the encyclopedia and oops, we forgot a C in a word. You know, it happens. Mostly those are benign, but every so often you get one of those mutations and it's not benign. It makes the virus either more lethal or more transmissive or both. That happened in 1919. There was some critical mutation. So it was the second wave that went around the world that actually caused the most trouble, killed the most people. What we would expect at this point is about a 5 or 6 month burn on this thing for wave one, and then we're all going to hold our breath and hope that there isn't a wave two, right? But the law of big numbers, you know, if this infects enough people in the world, the chances are it's gonna have it's already mutating. The question is it going to mutate in a worse way? There's always the chance it could mutate in a better way for us, meaning it mutates. It's still transmissive, but it's no longer lethal, and that confers immunity on people.
Yeah.
And that actually protects them, which happened in 1919. People who had the first version of Spanish flu were protected from the second wave. And so it's always possible we'll get a favorable mutation as well. We don't know yet, but I just wanted people to be aware of these things. It's not over in a week. You know, there's no, oh, we contained it, and it's done. These things take months to burn out.
All right, I've already kept you longer than I promised, so I want to move to wrap up with my last question because I know you're a busy guy. Like you said, you're going to get nervous when there's cases that are near you, in your hometown, in your state, whatever like that. And I think that's a good way to look at it. Unless, you know, you've been traveling and all that kind of stuff, going around the world, then you got to pay attention maybe even closer. Here we are, Saturday, January 25th. We talk about prudent preparation. I mean, at my side, you know, prepare accordingly. You know, we prepare for this, you know, a bank holiday that may suddenly happen one day. You got your physical gold, you got your physical silver, all that kind of stuff. What are prudent steps that anybody listening to us can take now? I mean, not just, and not even necessarily maybe, Chris, from a health standpoint, recognizing the threats to maybe the global supply chain. If all of a sudden, you know, China can't export anything, the whole country shuts down. What are prudent steps people can take today?
All right. So it's actually a fairly big list of things to do. And, you know, we're running these at the site as well. So if people can hear this now, but if they want to come and read it, maybe download it or something like that, this is all out at our site. But the first thing, if this really goes pandemic, you have to be prepared to treat yourself at home. So what I was getting at with those 10,000 beds in Wuhan, listen, if they have 500,000 people that need them, it's just overwhelmed. The last place I would go, unless I really had to, like I've got 105 fever, I can't breathe, I've got pneumonia, then I go to the hospital. But a lot of people have this instinct like, oh, I don't feel good, I should go to the hospital. Last place you want to be if they're already overwhelmed. And maybe you didn't have the disease, but now you're hanging around a lot of people who do.
Right.
So first thing is, be prepared to treat yourself at home. There's all kinds of things, you know, you'd be amazed what 800 milligrams of ibuprofen will do for you. You know, you need electrolytes and stuff like that. And maybe NyQuil if you got a lot of coughing, just standard flu stuff. So people should be ready for, well, what makes me feel good to treat flu at home? Because that's really what this is. And again, most people who get it are going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Again, it's not killing everybody that gets it, even at 3%, right?
Yeah.
So
exactly.
I mean, most people you're going to be fine if you take care of yourself, but go on.
Exactly. But you know, if or when the system gets overwhelmed, last place I want to go is actually the hospital. So you got to be prepared to treat at home. What does that mean? Well, you know, if somebody in my family comes down with this, it's not me or it is me, you prepare a sick room. You know, there's a place where that person exists. Hopefully it's got a bathroom attached to it, right? And you're going to seal that off from the rest of the house, right? And you're going to make that sick person wear the mask, because the person that the mask does the most good on is the sick person, because you don't want them coughing droplets out into the air. Instead of letting the sick person just cough everything and then everybody else has to protect all their surfaces, reverse that. Do both. But for sure, you know, you want to make sure you have a sick room where you can care for somebody, and then use all due precautions, right? You're going to disinfect the room pretty routinely. You're going to make sure you just, you know, very careful about washing and, you know, taking any clothes you wore and putting them in the washing machine. Standard sick care protocol. Just don't give it to the rest of your family if that happens. All right. So standard stuff there. And everybody, you know, they got to stock up on food, water, household supplies. So here's what we learned from SARS, which, by the way, was bad, but I don't think as bad as this is going to be, but we'll see. Stuff shut down. You know, what's the critical level? Hard question to answer, of trash collectors, pilots, train bus drivers, doctors who decide to stay home, who are like, you know what? I'm right out of this story. How many of those before you start getting into sort of supply shortfalls and things like that? So I think people prudently don't go out and hoard and buy stuff in a panic and fight people for it. That's irresponsible. But before this comes, you know, get yourself food, water, entertainment stuff, because listen, if we're all sort of locked up at home for a couple months, you know, they may even close schools down. What are your kids going to do? You know, are they going to watch Netflix the entire time? So, you know, get some cards, board games, whatever. So people need to be just think through, what do I need to basically live semi-isolated for a good long time? For some people, that means medicines, pet foods, all sorts of things. Everybody's got a different story around that. But we're talking about getting the basics, right? And, you know, for sure you want like hand soap and sanitizer, you need bleach, you need plenty of toilet paper. I don't know why that's a big concern of mine, but, you know, you know, garbage bags for medical waste disposal or clothes or something, plastic gloves, you know, stuff, right? Diapers if you got young kids, all that stuff. But this is the hard part. And this is the part where I hate talking about this, because, you know, you and I talk about this headline all the time, something like, close to half of all households in America, and I think Canada is in just as bad a shape, don't have enough money to make it through, like missing even a couple of paychecks, even
right.
one. And so if this comes to pass, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you didn't lose your job, but your kids are home from school. There's going to be a lot of financial stress. So, you know, be prepared to help people. If you are somebody who's sort of marginal financially, cut off all unnecessary expenses right now. Stop it. Right. You got three cell phones in the house. You only need one. Get rid of two. Right. Just whatever you can do to build that emergency fund, which everybody should have. But now I think it's a little more urgent. Right. And so, because that's, you know, this is sort of emergency planning. And then a big thing that I'm advising people through my website, there's a plant called elderberry, makes these cute little elderberries, and you can make a syrup out of it. Now, if you like your science, like I do, I have all these links to double blind placebo controlled studies, New England Journal of Medicine, pharma companies doing this stuff, investigating the impact of using elderberry syrup during the early stages of a viral infection. This stuff is magic. Doesn't stop you from getting it. But here's what happens. Because so they do these studies on poor college kids, right? They dose them with a rhinovirus, you know, and then gave them either real elderberry or a fake thing that tasted a lot like it. And asked the question, how bad were your symptoms? How long were you sick? So with elderberry, they found that the duration of the sickness was half as long and the intensity of the symptoms was half as high. So 0.5 times 0.5 means you still got the flu, but it was 25% of the normal experience. So I think that gives you a much better fighting chance. You can either buy the syrup or you can make it. I got a recipe at the site. I've used this stuff religiously for 10 years and I haven't had a sickness except for once. I was down in Argentina. I caught whatever cough they had down there. It was with me for almost a month because I couldn't find any elderberries. And that was a recent experience where I was just like, oh my God, this is what normal people deal with. I'd forgotten.
and it's you'd mentioned in your article, and we'll link that on this page in the video that you put out as well. We'll put that on this page too for more background. But it's the N95 mask and elderberry syrup that you can either make yourself or purchase.
Yep. Good stuff. It's really important. By the way, I use that as part of any normal flu cycle. I always have this stuff on hand, and here's where you use it. The first minute you feel that little tickly thing or give yourself permission to just even some feeling like, I don't feel right, that's when you start taking it, right? Yeah, and, you know, you just hit it up three times a day. If you're actually early stage, defined sick, five times a day. But you do that, if you get that in the first 24 to 48 hours, that's where it does its magic.
Does it taste bad?
No, it's got a lot of honey in it. It's actually pretty tasty.
And I'm thinking the best, you know, whenever I hear you talk about the elderberries, I think of your mother was a hamster and your father smelt of elderberries.
Yeah, but dad didn't get sick.
So that's right. He was healthy for a long time. All right, my friend, I got to let you go because I've kept you much longer than I promised. Peakprosperity.com is the site you need to go to and join, belong, so you can get, I mean, for all your information that you need, not just this. This is just part of what Chris does there. So I can't stress that enough. And Chris, I very much appreciate, you know, this is some down to earth. This is not hyperbole. This is not, you know, panic stuff. This is just, I really appreciate the conversation, just letting people know that this is potentially serious. There are steps a prudent person would take today just to, you know, kind of get ahead of things and stay ahead of things. So anything else that we've missed or anything like that that you think everyone should know?
I do think that the central bank bubbles meeting, this is a spanner wrench thrown into the global GDP transmission system. The shock to the system, good luck trying to print your way out of this. You know, I think this could be the black swan we've been looking for. As somebody on my site said, it's the black bat. Because this came from the bat originally. And the second thing is that we're just being stupid about this right now. And somebody just posted at my site that back in the 1900s, when immigrants were coming through Ellis Island, they were all detained, inoculated, and put into quarantine through a certain period. Because even in 1900, we knew, it's not a good idea to let illnesses into your country. We lost that sort of muscle memory. And now people are just getting off of planes and walking anywhere they want, you know, and it's just, we're being dumb about this. And so when you ask the question, what's the chance that this thing hasn't spread? I'm like, zero, because we're just being idiots. I don't know why we're being dumb. We were smarter in 1900. And I'm sure there's longtime scientists at the CDC who've been jumping up and down about this forever and ever saying, don't do this. But for political reasons, You know, the WHO came out the other day and said, we're not ready to declare a public health emergency because we're worried about the impact in global trade. It's like, dude, when did you guys become the WTO?
Yeah.
WHO, get back in line, you doctors, right? So that's, we're just being idiots about money. And like, it's like the economy is the most important thing. And where did concern about human life go away? Well, something happened here. And I just need, you know, for everybody out there who's clinging to that residual hope that somehow they have our best interest in hearts. Yeah, hold that hope, but also it's time to take matters into your own hands, which I'm sure all your listeners are already far along that curve, but I feel like saying it anyway.
And in summary, I mean, the chances of you, me, or anybody listening getting this disease pretty remote. And then if you do get it, the chances of it, you know, whacking you are, you know, pretty remote as well, 3-4%, whatever. So, I mean, it's not so much that risk that people need to be aware of. It's just the risk of, you know, what precautions you need to take and how this might affect your life, your friends' lives, your family's lives, all this stuff in the weeks and months to come that maybe is the greatest risk. Would that be a safe way to end it?
Absolutely a fair way, because it's not just how you react, and I'm not advising anybody panic, but it's how the whole system reacts. And all we need is a little bit of the system failing to operate on a just-in-time global delivery system basis, yeah, and things get a little wonky. So I want people to be prepared for wonky. And that means resilience, which means deep pantry, deep larder, just, you know, usual stuff.
Steps you can take today to prepare and should have taken anyway. I should be taking anyway. All right, Chris Martinson, my friend, smartest guy I know. Thank you for your time. Peakprosperity.com. Go there. Chris is posting regular updates now on what he sees with this. And so go there, visit there frequently. Chris, thank you. I can't thank you enough.
My pleasure, Craig.
And thank you, everybody, for listening. You know, we'll try to stay up on top of this as well. And at the same time, have a great weekend. We'll have more for you on Monday.